Hi, this is Marlena Lieberg for ACB Radio, and we are at the Washington Council of the Blind 2010 annual convention in Vancouver, Washington. We have about 185 attendees here and lots of exciting stuff, particularly down in the exhibit area. And I had the opportunity this morning to do something that I have never done. Can you imagine such a thing? I had the opportunity to put my hands on a replica of three piano keys, or a working model of three piano keys, and feel how the dampers rise when you press the key down, and feel how the I'll call them mallets, but I have two experts here who will, I'm sure, correct me as we go on in this interview, but feel how what I call the mallets reach up to strike and make the tune. What am I talking about? I'm talking about an exhibit from the School of Piano Technology for the Blind. And with me, I have Len Ledger, the Executive Director. Welcome, Len.
Thank you, Marlena. It's nice to be here.
It's wonderful to have you. And I have Mark Burby, who is just about to graduate from the school. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you.
Mark's probably come the longest distance of anybody in this room. Mark is not from the Pacific Northwest. Mark traveled all the way from Minneapolis, Minnesota to participate in the school, and we're going to talk about that as well. But Len, can you give me a little bit of information? Now, I've always known, which is why I stumbled over the name, I've always known the school as the Piano Hospital.
Well, that's been our traditional name since it was founded in 1949, Marlena, by Emil Fries. And the Piano Hospital is a great name, and a lot of people, and we, in fact, still use it primarily as our reference name. But for purposes of marketing on the internet especially, we felt we needed a name that described better what we do. We're a school, we teach piano technology, and we only teach that to blind and visually impaired people. So we changed our name in 2005 to the School of Piano Technology for the Blind, and it's made a real difference for us in terms of the number of hits that we're getting on our website. In 2005, we were getting about 35 hits a month. Now we get about 214 on average.
Wow.
So it's been made a difference, and that's our primary source of new students. People first check us out on the internet, and if they're interested, they give us a call, and we go through a process which includes a two-day career evaluation, and they come back from wherever they are. We had a student just here from Kentucky last month that spent 2 days with us, and we evaluated his musical aptitude, his mechanical aptitude, made sure he had normal hearing. Don't have to have super hearing, but you have to have normal hearing. And checked him out as far as his interpersonal skills so he'd have an opportunity to do a good job as a piano technician. And I'm happy to say he did a great job, and we're looking forward to having him as a new student in September of 2011.
How long is the course? When students come, for how long do they stay? When do they graduate?
It's actually two 10-month courses.
So, really?
Yes, it's 20 months. So they're here for really 2 years, and they end up with the summers off. So, and you know, that you could go back home. In Mark's case, he went home this summer and spent a few weeks back there. And other students do the same thing. So you have a two-month break in July and August. Come back in September and start over again for the final year.
And do students live at the school?
There is no actual school housing as such, not a dormitory. We own a little house next door to the school, which can accommodate up to three students or one married couple, depending on the situation each year. We kind of make that decision. Right now, there are two students living in that facility right next to the school. The other students, and there are six currently enrolled, are living in apartments that are somewhere within less than a mile from the school. But one of the advantages of the Vancouver area is that the C-Tran bus system is excellent. Many, many bus routes, most of them within on half hour or 20 minute intervals, and a lot of them go by our school. So most of our students that aren't living within a walking distance are taking a bus to school, and it works out just fine.
What about support services? As you know, I can see some of my listeners thinking, well, gee, you know, I live in Maine. I've never been to the Pacific Northwest. I'd be afraid to even think about living someplace like that. How do you bridge that gap?
Well, we do have opportunities for the students to have orientation and mobility services provided through DSB, Department of Services for the Blind. So when the student comes here from Maine, we have had students from Maine, by the way, and 35 other states. So we have a total of 36 states represented in our schools so far over the years, as well as 14 foreign countries. So they come in, and a good example of that would be a man named John Grace. He's the a person that came here in 1958 from Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia. And at that time was a much different world. And John flew on his own. Nobody was with him. A young man of 18 years old.
Wow.
Landed there. We at the airport, we always pick people up if we can, make out the arrangement to pick people up and then bring them to their accommodation, wherever it's going to be, and help them get settled. We always do that. And we help them find furnishings for their apartments, because you can't really move.
Sure.
You know, most people aren't able to move their belongings all the way out here.
Sure.
So we help them with that. And Lions Clubs are a big, big help. They're out there always giving us a call. We have a bed. We have a couch. We have a dresser. Whatever they come across, they think of us, and we will pick them up and store them for students that are coming in. So we help with that part, getting a person settled. And then through Services for the Blind, they can have an orientation and mobility session where they learn the bus system. So you actually have a trained professional O&M instructor that would work with the new person until they felt comfortable using the bus system that we have.
So this is really a kind of a community partnership endeavor, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Very much so, yeah. We're very well connected with a lot of people in the community, and that's thanks to the good work that Emil Fries and Ken Service, before me, built this strong network within these community partners. Everyone is very willing and aware of our needs and willing to support us.
Mark, talk to me a little bit about you. Have you been blind all your life?
I'm legally blind, so I do have some vision, and it's as far as I know, it's been stable all my life.
Did you do anything prior to going to the piano school, or is this your first career?
I've worked in several different kinds of businesses. I have a bachelor's in communication, and when I moved out into the business world, I started in computers. Data administration, I worked for a while. I worked as a medical assembler for a while.
Well, excuse me, but what the heck is a medical assembler?
Medical assembler, people put together medical devices.
Okay.
And I have a magnifier that I used to do that. And, it was, you know, it was pretty challenging, but I did that for about 15 months. I worked there. And I also went back to the computer end of things and did medical transcription for a while, so which involved a little more schooling. And I did that for about 2 years. So I'm, you know, not a youngster anymore. I just turned 41. And I play piano, and my dad has pianos. And we have an interest in that. And so I've... back in high school, I actually took a very brief piano tuning type of course that showed you the basic overview of how to do this. And I've had an interest as a hobby, but I never pursued it professionally. So in recent years, the interest has been rekindled. And I also thought about maybe getting into doing some restoration work and reselling old pianos.
Wow.
In the same line of work as tuning back in the Twin Cities there. So that's kind of where things are now. So a lot of different kinds of job work experiences, but they all are amazingly tying together in running my own business as I look at doing this. You know, it takes a lot of different kinds of skills to run a business. and outside of just the mechanical skills. Interestingly, the shop skills that are required in this are very new to me. Back when I was in high school in woodworking class was probably the last time that I really worked with my hands in a woodworking kind of thing. And this involves quite a bit of that, you know, and repair work and restoration types of work. So that's tying in as well in this whole career path.
Were you apprehensive about coming from the Twin Cities to this wacky Pacific Northwest part of the country?
I definitely don't know anybody over here, and it was a very big decision. It wasn't something that I took lightly. I definitely prayed about it, and I knew that if I did do this, that I was going to be committed to following through with it. I came out for their orientation session in September.
Tell me what that was like. What did you experience in that session?
That's a 2-day evaluation period where, like Len was saying, where you kind of get an idea of what the student's aptitude is on some basic regulation and tuning exercises. So that's what they exposed me to, and I got to play around with a little bit of tuning and different assignments and regulation things. And I got a good evaluation through that process, and it was definitely worth the time and energy to come out and get a little preview of what it was all about and to see how the school functioned and everything and talk to other students, certainly, and all that. So,
if you could describe in some way how this new, what shall I call it, new endeavor has changed your life or enhanced your life, what would you say?
Well, it's given me a greater appreciation for the art and the science of piano tuning. It's more than just listening, and it's more than just like a musical kind of skill. I play piano, I'm a musician, and I can tell if an instrument has been well tuned. But to get it there is a very it's a technical process, and it is a very hands-on process, you know, as we manipulate the little tuning pins and try to get them to stay exactly where you want them to stay. It takes a feel, and you have to develop that through a lot of practice working with the tools. And so it combines a lot of different things, and I really appreciate that now, having been through it.
And I understand that you're going to, when you graduate and leave us in December.
End of January.
Yeah. That you're going to open your own business. But I thought that this was a piano tuning school, so where are you learning the skills to develop that business plan to know what you need to do?
Mm-hmm. Well, in my case, I have run a small business in medical transcription previously, so I have a little bit of background as far as keeping track of, you know, ins and outs and payments and records and things, which is essential. But they do have an organization that we work with as students called SCORE. And Len, you're going to have to help me out with the acronym there.
It stands for the Service Corps of Retired Executives. It's part of the Small Business Administration.
And these are retired business people who volunteer their time to work with other people, whoever wants their help, essentially, to get going in a small business. And it's a group that I found to be amazingly invaluable in terms of not only their knowledge, but their willingness to help with questions and developing a business plan, which is a part of the program at the school, to actually go through and think through a business process and a business plan prior to starting. And they're just very approachable, and they're able to network really well. When I went back, as Len was mentioning, I went back to the Minneapolis area for about 6 weeks last summer, A part of that was spent tuning pianos, actually, and earning a little bit of money over there. And also, it was a time to meet with the score people in the Twin Cities area, so I can start networking with them. And, you know, I'm not somebody who is really gifted, especially with numbers. And so, as a part of my process, I've been able to identify that's something that I'm going to need help with. And knowing people like this and having resources through them, I think is going to be invaluable.
So what's your business going to look like?
Business is going to be simple. I don't need some big fancy thing. What I essentially want to do is work on my foundational skills as a piano tuner and technician.
And tell me what that means.
Okay. Tuning, maintaining my skills there, that essentially is one of the big money makers in the business. And maintaining my regulation skills, and that's how the piano physically functions. So between those two things, that'll be the majority of my business. The other part of my business is going to be restoring and reselling pianos. And I have an upright piano waiting for me back there to work on, which I'm planning to tackle, and keep as my own piano, but put it on the market and sell it when the time is right. So, day-to-day operations, I think one of the biggest challenges is finding transportation that's going to be reliable, and I'm planning to have contracted drivers get me around from point A to point B. Public transportation in the area I'm in the Twin Cities, is very well-developed and very punctual. But I'm planning to use that only as a secondary kind of emergency kind of thing, because it does take a lot of time to navigate around the cities and things. So, and then hire like a CPA to just keep track of my bookkeeping, and I can't think of too much else, you know, outside of that. It's just a matter of learning to stay organized and stay busy enough, but not too busy.
Well, and speaking of that, let me ask you this one. When I think about pianos and piano tuning, and I want to elaborate on this perhaps in a bit, but particularly to you, Mark, I think about this and I think, wait a minute, there's so many digital keyboards out there now. How viable is this as a career?
It was interesting, about 20 years ago, I was reading an article in Keyboard Magazine, and they were talking about the emergence of all this digital technology, and the question back then was, well, is it ever going to replace our acoustic pianos? And the conclusion even back at that time was no. Digital technology can imitate the acoustic piano incredibly well, but it'll never replace it. Simply because of the physics involved. An acoustic piano has strings that vibrate, and every time you play a note, it's a little bit different. It's never exactly the same. And the brain picks up on that. It may be kind of a subconscious thing. Some digital pianos are better at recreating the recorded analog acoustical sounds than others. But even the best ones are still, they're just recordings and repetition over and over and over again, and that dynamic involved in an acoustic instrument is lost.
Sure.
So they'll never, you know, there's just something about the piano that is so dynamic, and it's an impressive machine. I mean, you have a 9-foot concert grand, and you sit behind that thing and belt out some chords, and it is amazing the tonal qualities and things that come out of that. You can hook up a sound system to a digital piano and get the same amount of volume, but the experience just isn't the same.
Well,
hard to explain.
I must tell you that when we moved to Seattle, we moved from a very large house to a very small house, and my husband Gary's first wife, who has since passed away, she was a pianist. And so in our big house, we had a Knabi grand piano. We paid to move it here to Washington, to Seattle, and discovered it's just not going to fit in this living room. So we're both music lovers, and Gary's much more musician than I, but I attempt it. I play at it. And so we said, okay, well, we'll go out and get a Yamaha CVP-98 keyboard because it sounds good and it'll fit in the room. Mm-hmm. Well, at one point, we had the Knabi and the Yamaha because we were selling the Knabi. And so Gary sat behind one, I sat behind the other, and that Knabi beat the stickins out of that. And I had that digital keyboard cranked, but that Knabi absolutely filled the room with sound. So I appreciate what you're saying.
And getting, I think your question, though, was if we're concerned about
right.
its impact. Certainly, it's made an impact. And in the last, 30-plus years, there's been a dramatic decrease in the production of pianos in this country. And that's a reality. At the same time, there's a lot of pianos in existence. There's a lot of pianos that need to be maintained. There's a lot of pianos that need to be refurbished and managed. And I'm planning to be an RPT, which is a registered piano technician with the Piano Technicians Guild. And there's a lot of people in the business, but there's very few people who are certified to do this work. And so people who hire somebody who may come in and tune their piano may do a good job, and they really may not. And so from this standpoint, getting certified and being dedicated to the work, I'm pretty confident that the work is going to be there. And that certification will open up some venues, too, that otherwise wouldn't have been.
Well, that's fabulous. And I love your attitude, and I love that you love the acoustic piano, because really, the digital ones, as you say, they're nice, but boy.
They certainly can be very nice, yeah.
Those acoustic guys. Len, tell me, what is your employment rate on the average?
On the average, we have an 80% employment rate.
That's 80, 80.
80. Over the years, we've had 80% of an employment rate. For the last three semesters, we've had 100% employment.
Wow.
So going out, starting their own businesses immediately, or working for someone.
Do you work with people on kind of what I would call adjacent skills? Like if they're not going to be perhaps like Mark, who's very industrious and very motivated, but they don't want to start a business. They want to go to work for somebody. Do you have a piece of the training that helps people with kind of those interviewing skills and presentation skills?
Yes, we do. We don't have a placement office as some schools do, where we're out there looking for job opportunities within various music stores or schools or colleges mm-hmm. and so on like that. But we do have a network of alumni. Over 200 alumni are in the field. They meet on a weekly basis through the internet, so people from all over the world really connect on a website called For the People.
And oh, sure.
Yeah, yeah. There's a home of the piano hospital there on For the People. And they have discussions, whether it's personal or technical or business discussions, or sometimes new jobs will come up. Last year there was an opportunity in El Paso, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
One of the piano tuners down there had passed away, and they were saying, gee, there's mm-hmm. only two other guys down here, and there's a lot of pianos to be tuned. And we had two of our technicians go down there and take up that role, and they're doing great. There's just a lot of work down there. So that kind of referral happens. We also work with our students in terms of helping them if they're looking to work at a piano store versus starting their own business. I'm thinking of an example of one of our students that came here from New York. wanted to work in New York City, and we're working with him, we identified the area that he planned to live in. We found 22 piano stores within an easy bus ride of where he was. We helped him with his letter of resume, his letter cover letter, and all the rest of it. Sent them off to the he got a job at a place called Beethoven Pianos. Loves it. They love him. They've written us back saying, if you got any more like him, send us out.
Wow.
Send here.
Wow.
So we do some of that work, but we don't guarantee that we're going to be able to find anyone a job. It's just too hard to say. But we have a strong network, and we I think one of the things that we have done since the days of Emil Fries, our students are involved in the Toastmasters program.
Oh, good.
So if you know that program,
where
people meet on a weekly basis and practice giving talks of different lengths and different topics, and it's all about trying to be more comfortable in front of a group. So whether you're talking to a small group of people or a larger group of people, it's feeling comfortable enough to say, here's what I do, here's who I am, and it's that personal one-to-one networking that will probably be the most effective form of marketing there is, rather than trying to spend a lot of money on ads and different papers and so on like that. It's building a network of people through service clubs, through your church, through your friends, getting referrals that way is a great way to build a business, and we help people develop those skills.
Let me bring the elephant in the room to the forefront. It has often been said over the years of my life, and I've had 20 more of those than Mark, so I have often heard throughout my adult life that, oh, piano tuning, that's where, you know, if you can't do anything else, so you become a piano tuner. And I don't want to be a piano tuner because it's just associated with blind people, and you can't get a job doing anything else. How do you guys get around that?
Want me to tackle that first?
Sure.
Mark?
Sure, either one.
Okay. Well, I'll start out with the how do you overcome the idea that you know, piano tuning is just a stereotypical blind trade that would be lumped in with chair caning,
right? Or basket weaving and broom making.
Yeah. So obviously, just by the nature of the complexity of those three tasks that you've just described, as well as piano tuning, when you're looking at an instrument that has over 10,000 moving parts, 88 keys, 220 strings, you really are looking at a whole different body of knowledge that's required. And as Marcus said, it's more than. It's an art, it's a science, there's a technology to it that surpasses the trade mentality of if you can't do anything else, go do that. Mm-hmm. That's not true. There's no one that can go out and just start tuning a piano without some sort of training. And we provide the kind of training that is specifically geared to helping people learn acoustical piano tuning. So it's all by ear, in other words. And some folks may go out and buy a, I don't even know how much it would cost, $1,000 for an electronic piano tuner, and be able to match note for note a needle on the dial. We, in our visually impaired world, don't do that. We listen by ear, and that's the best way to tune a piano that there is, because you're tuning harmonically versus tuning note by note.
Mm-hmm.
And some people have pointed out to me that if you're tuning with an electronic tuner and you hit that note, if you hit that note hard, the needle's going to do one thing. If it hits the note a little bit easier, it's going to do something else. If you hit it in between, it's going to do something else. So you're always kind of adjusting in the ballpark, but you're never really right on. Whereas acoustically, you're hearing that beat, and you're going to be right on. And that's why a concert pianist would always have an acoustical piano tuner tune his piano, as opposed to an electronic tuning device tuning your piano. So it's understandable that people would carry forward this stereotypical idea, because at one point that's all people could do, and now there's so many other opportunities out there that using computers and digital technologies that people can get jobs in call centers, and Kirk Adams today was talking about contract control work that sounds very interesting and very, you know, exciting, with all kinds of things to do in a daily work flow. And I get all the credit to that kind of work. But piano tuning is also a very challenging career field that really makes you think and really makes you utilize all the skills and talents that you have, and it really challenges you as a person to keep your positive thinking going, because it can be very frustrating trying to solve a problem, and some problems are just difficult to solve, and you have to try one way and it doesn't work, you have to try another way, and finally you will find a solution if you're able to be patient and keep your resolve. So it's certainly not a no-brainer, rote skill that a person would use. It's a very dynamic skill that requires all of a person's energy, and Mark has given a good example of all of a person's heart as well, to want to be an effective technician.
Mark, what do you think if someone, if another visually impaired or blind person said, why do you want to do that? That's so stereotypical. What would you say?
I think, you know, the obvious thing is that most of the people who are doing this business aren't blind.
That's true.
Really, it's much bigger than just a blind trade, as to put it that way, is... not really sure how to take that. It's very challenging to think that, you know, you can't do anything else, so we're just going to tune pianos. And again, there's a lot of people out there, fully sighted people who are not qualified, who call themselves piano tuners. To really do it correctly and do it well requires a lot of work, and a lot of discipline and time and all that. So I think that those kinds of stereotypes are really unfounded.
Well, you know, and if you carry this out to the nth degree, you go to a craft fair now. Who's making money? The sighted basket weavers, the wonderful broom makers. I mean, this is now art. Cane furniture now? Holy guacamole, that's worth money. Yeah. So, you know, maybe we blind folks ought to kind of stop and take stock and say, whoa, wait a minute, I'm looking at this thing all upside down and backwards.
You know, and regardless of what the industry is, as long as you're working hard, it's an honest job, what's wrong with it?
Yeah. Oh, I couldn't agree with you more.
We may not be able to keep up with the Joneses, but for some of us, we're not into that. We're not concerned about the Joneses. We just want to do an honest job and do it well.
What kind of music do you play?
I was classically trained. I started playing when I was 4 years old. And I had one of my teachers was into the blues. She was actually a Catholic nun. And I'll tell you what, she was an incredible blues player.
Go sister.
Yeah, and she traveled over to Brazil and stuff.
Oh, I love
it. 6'3" or something like that, and she could just wail on the blues. And so I was about 12 when I started getting into blues types of stuff, and continued classical training for about 2 more years when I was about 14. Basically, I would say kind of improvisational, bluesy kinds of things. I played in a band for a while back in college, and certainly have a lot of eclectic influences musically.
Yeah. I wish I'd known about all of this. I would have gently but firmly twisted your arm to get you to play in our talent show tonight. That would have been great. Len, tell me, what is the average student? What do they look like? How old are they? What education have they had?
All right. The average student, first of all, has to have be a post-secondary. You've had to graduate from high school or have a GED, or at least the ability to benefit testing has to have been done. So you have to be beyond the high school age. Okay. So the youngest person that we have in the program is actually 19 years old. The oldest person we currently have in the program is 52 years old. And that's pretty much the range that we have. And it's a person at one end of the spectrum that was just looking forward to starting their life, and what do they want to do with their life. They like music. They're good mechanically. They want to maybe, in one case, be able to perform, and in between performances do tuning, piano tunings to augment their income. That's one type of student. Another type of student at the other end of the age spectrum is a person that maybe was got blind later in life, or had career changes throughout his life and ended up thinking about piano technology as a possibility later in life, and looking forward to having another. And there's no end to the amount of tuning that you can do. Ken Service, who was my predecessor in this job, ran the piano hospital for 35 years, is still tuning. He's 80 years old, and he still tunes, I don't know how many pianos a week, but he could probably tune a lot more pianos than he is, because he only takes certain jobs at a time, but he can tune a couple pianos a day easily at the age of 80 years old. So it's the kind of skill that you can continue to use as long as you want to use it and have it supplement your income and add to your life.
Are there any women in the program?
Oh, yeah.
I always think of men as being piano tuners. Smack my mouth.
Well, that's probably because for the first, probably, let me think, 1980 was the first woman that came into the program. So that those first years are probably part of that stereotypical thinking where women did home ec and men did, woodworking or piano tuning or whatever it was that they were teaching in schools. That may have been part of it. But we do have women in our program, and one or two women are always in the group. So it's not restricted in the least. And a female tuner is a very, very well-accepted person in business. Some of the most successful piano technicians are female and do very well with all the work that needs to be done. They're able to handle everything that a man can do and do it very well.
I remember one time when we were having the Kanabi tuned. The tuner broke. How many strings was it, Gary? Do you remember?
Well, he broke one of the very low strings.
Yeah.
And it was a bear to replace.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't get them.
Yeah.
And
what a racket. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh.
So, Mark, if you broke my string, which you probably never would, but if you did, how would that, like, if I broke somebody's piano string, I'd be like, oh, my gosh, they're never going to hire me back. Have you kind of gotten the skills? I'm sure you've gotten them along the way, but particularly in Len's program, to kind of go, whoops, okay, we're going to go with this. I mean, what would you do?
No, we actually haven't discussed that at all. No, I'm just kidding.
I don't have to see that smile on your face.
Whenever you tune a piano, there's always a potential that a string is going to break. It's just a part of the reality of it. You're tightening something, and a lot of times piano strings are old, they get corroded, they get brittle, and they break. And so there is a number of resources available to, you know, in the case of a bass string like you were talking about, you can actually have one remanufactured for that particular piano, and there's a process for doing that. There's also generic bass strings available that you can buy, and if you can find one that matches well enough, if it's, you know, not a critical application, if you're not in a real, you know, like a performance venue or concert venue or something.
Oh, my gosh, talk about stress.
Yeah, really critical. A lot of times something like that can suffice. If it's an upper string, which are not wound, like the bass strings are wound with copper wire around steel core wire, the upper part of the piano just has this steel wires by themselves. Those can be replaced relatively simply with a right gauge wire in that region of the piano. So it's definitely nothing that is out of the realm of proper training and repair.
Well, is there anything for either one of you that you would like to share that I haven't asked?
What is the income potential for this kind of work?
What is the income potential for this kind of work?
I would say it's interesting to just do the math, because typically, and doing it with an easy number like $100 of piano tuning is an average amount. Some areas, you know, charge more per tuning. Mm-hmm. Other areas charge less. But on average, about $100 to have your piano tuned is a reasonable amount. And if you to look at that as saying, well, let's see, I could tune one in the morning and one in the afternoon, probably pretty easily. You could probably tune two in the morning if you really got good, but at least two a day. And I'd say, let's say work 5 days a week. That would be 10 tunings a week, and take the weekend off.
Mm-hmm.
10
mm-hmm.
tunings a week at $100.
Mm-hmm.
That's roughly $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mark had brought up the point that we're going to have some transportation. As blind and visually impaired people, we don't drive ourselves. At least not legally. At least not now. Maybe if they come up with some of these cars that can drive us around, that'll be one thing. But so we figure about 20% of our gross goes to the car expenses, mm-hmm. the hiring of a driver and their expenses in running that car and so on like that. So even taking that out, that's still $800.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a pretty reasonable way to look at an income when you're, and that's just two tunings a day. Then in the case of a guy like Mark who's got some ideas about doing some refinishing and refurbishing of pianos, you work on a piano, you sell a piano, you may be able to get $1,000 or $2,000 for that piano once you're finished with it. That you do that on your off hours. In other words, you have a day where, well, I couldn't find anybody to tune their piano this afternoon, so I think I'll busy myself by restringing this piano or working on the hammers or whatever the project might be that you're working on, as far as the service work goes, which can also add to your total profit. So it can be a very lucrative form of business. And I think, I don't know if you were in the session that I was in in the training opportunity mm-hmm. session, mm-hmm. I told the story of one of our graduates from Canada that happened to be in our school last week. And was telling me of his business. He's been at it now since 1985. So he's been up there for a while, and he's established. But he said last year he tuned 500 pianos. He moved 600 pianos. So if you have a mind to move, if you're able to do it, and he's a huge, I mean, this guy is like 280 pounds, right? He's a very strong guy. So the piano moving for him is nothing. But he moves a lot of pianos. He tunes a lot of pianos. And he told me, Len, last year was my best year. I made $120,000 gross.
Wow.
So just as an idea, I mean, I just use that. That's the most recent story I've had. I've had other mm-hmm. success stories, but I don't want to oversell it and say that's going to happen the first day
sure,
on the job.
Sure,
you know, think of it as a starting year, maybe, if you can earn in the 30s as an income and then slowly build yourself up. It's with your initiative and your energy and the area that you're in that will cause you to be as successful financially as you want to be. But even beyond the financial success, I think is the sense of purpose and sense of satisfaction that people get in working on in this field. People feel like when there's a piano being played or a concert, they're the unseen artist. They've contributed mm-hmm. to the performance of that piano. Whether it's a student learning the piano or a virtuoso playing the piano, without a well-tuned piano, that's not going to be a good experience.
Mm-hmm.
And people feel very good about that. Mm-hmm. They feel like they're adding to the harmony of the world, if you want to call it that, mm-hmm. in a more global sense.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. I think most of our people feel very, very good about themselves and about the role they play in the world and having a sense of purpose and having a sense of importance in terms of the role they play.
What about you, Mark? Is there anything I haven't asked you that you would like to share?
Well, just in following up on that, you know, it's probably obvious, but getting the numbers, the figures that Len is talking about represents a lot of hard work. That's not just something, oh yeah, I'm going to, you know, show up and have this little tuning gig and have it be $100,000 a year. You know, that is a lot of work right there. Doing two pianos a day, especially if you're hiring a driver, you know, for me in my business, for example, I'm paying a flat fee and planning to pay a flat fee for my driver, $25 per job. And if I sell my business, to sell my services at $85 or $95 or $90 a tuning, that's a significant amount of the money that I'm making. In that, if I want to really get aggressive and up those numbers, is going to be, you know, I've got to always take that into consideration. So it's like any business. You get out of it what you put into it. And if people are really willing to work at something and they want something to really dig their teeth into and learn and get be serious about it, I'd say there's definitely income potential there. It's like the graduate who Len was talking about. He is diversifying. And like in any business or investment, that's always a great idea to be able to do that. And the more that a person is willing to do that and able to do that, the better off they're going to be, no matter what they do.
Len, how do people get a hold of you or someone at the school for more information?
Well, a phone message would be the easiest way, probably. And our number is 360-693-1511.
That's 360-693-1511.
Right. Or if you're out of this area, you can call our 800 number. We have a 1-888-693-1511.
Or 888-693-1511.
Right.
And you're on the web?
Yes, we are. It's www.pianotuningschool.org.
Pianotuningschool.org.
Right.
Well, this has been absolutely fascinating. I'm going to publicly thank Lauren Buntmeyer for contacting me. We've been talking since May about what could we do to share this information. Lauren is certainly passionate about getting the word out about the school and getting the word out to blind people that, hey, if you haven't thought about this career, you know, you might want to kind of think about it, because there are pianos everywhere, aren't there?
Absolutely, there are.
And those pianos need tuning, don't they?
Absolutely.
And there's no doggone reason on the earth why a blind person who's been trained and is technically competent shouldn't have a piece of that pie.
Absolutely. In fact, Marlena, let me tell you a good story about Lauren Buntmeyer. Lauren spent most of his career at Kansas University. He was the technician, the piano technician for that university. So however many hundreds of pianos they had, he tuned and repaired them for years.
Wow.
I think he's just recently retired and still continues to do tuning and piano repair. But that's another aspect of a career that could be possible. A lot of our graduates end up at a university setting, and it takes away the need for a driver. You just get yourself to your location every day and work on all the pianos in that in that college or school or whatever.
So sure.
Just another insight.
Well, Mark, I wish you the best of luck. And if you ever want to come back on ACB Radio to tell us your success, you have only to get hold of me. That door is always open for you. I just, you kind of energize me. I won't say inspire, because I hate it when people say, oh, you're such an inspiration. Yuck. But you do energize me, and I wish you all the luck.
Thank you.
And thank you, Len.
You're very welcome. Thank you for the honor of being here.
Well, we'll be back to this very location in 2012. Why don't we have another date?
Sounds great.
All right. For ACB Radio, I'm Marlena Lieberg with Gary off to my left and Agnes sleeping behind me. And everybody, take care.